Hello, and welcome to yet another gleefully exciting episode of My Dog Will Eat My Face. I am just so excited. I'm sure you are too. You can hear it in my voice. I'm so thrilled. No, in all seriousness, I'm a little bit excited because I did have a little bit of a recent victory, an odd one. And that I have been fighting with my hospice provider for years to provide to me some blood work, or to do some blood work so I could discern the, I guess, velocity of damage being done to my heart. I only have 2 points showing an obvious escalation, but I really wanted a third one. And for whatever reason, they've not been able to do it for years, or they refused. But just recently, they said they're going to do it this next week. So I got to wait a little bit, but they said they'll do it in a few more days and I'll get the results. Now, they might be really dark results, but hey, it's a little victory for me to get what I want and what I've asked for years. So, in a way, I actually am kind of excited. I'm excited to finally get another data point to discern my velocity of potential fatality. So, it's just something I've wanted to know for a long time, and for whatever reason, they've dragged their feet, and they're finally going to do it, along with some other basic metabolic stuff, and to check my kidneys and liver and all that other super good fun stuff. So, in a weird way, that is actually a victory. So, yay. I'm actually looking forward to me being poked with a needle and bleeding. But apart from that little bit of good news, I've had somewhat of an epiphany recently. A rather, I suppose, bad one. I've been spending so much time in bed, blaming a lot of it on just ongoing fatigue. And I've lost a lot of interest in doing things that used to give me a lot of joy. And when I sort of thought about it and verbalized it that way to myself, I was actually realizing that this might not be just fatigue. These are the classic symptoms of depression. And I really had to do a lot of introspection and analysis to determine, one, if that was indeed happening, and two, what was causing that, I guess apart from the obvious, right? I mean, it's never yay, yay, joy, joy when you're in hospice care, constantly being told you're dying slowly. Great, you know. Apart from that little bit, I wanted to know why I was depressed. Because it's just not normally in me to be depressed for an extended period of time. So today I wanted to talk about that and that analysis and what I think I've come to conclude. So that little bit of a deep dive is what I wanted to really discuss today, apart from my little victory. But I'm sure I'll have more on that later when it actually occurs. So today, I really thought it was necessary to address that concern that I had, that this was actually a sign of a deep depression. So we get to look forward to that. But that's what I wanted to discuss in today's podcast. So, I had to analyze why I was sleeping so much and losing interest in a lot of my usual pleasures, I suppose. And I really had to acknowledge that those were indeed signs of depression. Well, of course, I'm also on an SSRI, which is a long-term antidepressant medication. And I've really at the forefront of my mind, cognitively, been at peace with these larger issues in my life. I did notice that I kept falling back on the emotion of anger, of revenge even. And all of that was centered, is centered, perhaps is the better way to put it, frankly, around my very last boss at my last workplace. And that's really for an obvious reason. I exhausted my FMLA, Family Medical Leave Act, in which the company had to ensure that I had a similar position to return to if I were on medical or family leave for, I think it is, 365 days. But it was only protected for a really set period of time. I don't think it's for a full year, because that doesn't make sense. I can't recall exactly what the timeline was or how much I had used and how long it's reset again to start over on the timer, I guess. But at the time, I know that I unfortunately was hospitalized with a severe pneumonia where they were talking about putting me on antibiotics for months at home and that it was such a severe infection, I literally had to be on IV antibiotics for like half a year or something. And after working some of that out, when I got finally released from the hospital, I then got sick again with a sepsis infection that I probably got in the hospital. And that was, it was very serious. I went back to the ER when I was supposed to return to work. I actually went back to the ER because I was fighting a severe fever and felt absolutely miserable. And was fighting basically for my life, the survivability of a sepsis infection where your blood itself is facing a widespread infection is about 50-50. I mean, I had a 50% chance of surviving. And I was going in and out of consciousness and, I mean, just extreme high fevers, like 105 or something, even 106, I think. It was really bad, and it was so bad that the hospital even called my parents to come up and be with me, thinking this was it. I've never had it before where the hospital called family to say, you better come here because this guy might not make it. And I didn't know they did that, actually, until well after the fact, obviously. But truly, I was fighting for my life with just a sepsis infection. And it was in that time that my FMLA expired, and I had a new boss who was as friendly as a brick and about as intelligent as a brick too. And before that moment, I could tell was ramping up to dismiss me. Every bit of feedback was negative. She would snap at me in front of others and say the most asinine things I ever heard, give me a poor review when she was my new boss for only like 3 weeks. These certainly are not new things in the corporate world. This has happened, unfortunately, to a lot of people. In my case, it's just a case of me too. It happened to me too. I was a stellar employee and winning court cases and conducting training that ended up in the business journal, actually. And they were talking about sending me to conferences to give presentations and speaker rights to train others in the industry before I got really sick. It went from that to, oh, you're terrible. Like in a heartbeat. And so I basically knew what she was doing. It was just so obtuse. And I was even printing out documents that were very obvious signs of this and keeping them, secretly keeping them at home. So I had a paper trail and evidence to take action against the company if that happened. And lo and behold, it did. When I was fighting for my life for sepsis, they were so uncouth to say, well, you've now run out of FMLA while you're fighting for your life, so you have no position to return to. Like, great. And it was actually at that point when, in order to survive and keep my income where it was, I basically had to stay on disability for a little bit. And that actually was also, unfortunately, the time when I went into severe changes in my heart, and my CHF really caught up to me, and I frankly, honestly, at that point, couldn't even return to work if I wanted to. But it doesn't change the fact that I felt wronged. If it truly came to a point to where I just simply could not work because of my physical condition, that's something that I should be able to work out with my employer in the daylight, you know, and it shouldn't be a sneaky maneuver that they do to eliminate my position, to take away my ability to negotiate and handle the situation like an adult. It was really sleazy, in short. And the individuals that hired me long before this other boss of mine even came to the company didn't take any action to protect me. And I even emailed them like, what gives, guys? You hired me and you've only said good things to me. Now this person shows up out of nowhere as a hatchet person and, well, the rest was history. And they were just cowardly and hid behind HR. And unfortunately, that is the way the corporate world is these days. You don't want to be loyal to a company ever. You better act as your own self-agent because it's ridiculous these days. Companies demand unfettered loyalty from their employees where they, in turn, act brutally and heartlessly to their employees. And that's just the way it is now. And frankly, employees should not put up with that kind of crap. And it was for me a line in the sand where I went from being a productive, happy worker, so to speak, and having meaning in my life, in my career, to being disabled and I guess trapped at home, for lack of a better word. With nothing I can do about it. It was a very clear demarcation line in my mind between the foregoing good life and then the subsequent disabled life. And then it became very easy for me to in turn focus my anger on this one individual who pulled the trigger. And I've noticed that years later, to this day, I have nightmares about it, and I am still very angry about that. And I already knew cognitively anger was a very destructive and taxing emotion to be locked into. But despite being so cognitively aware of that, I could not shake it. And that, frankly, is what was bringing me down even further than it ever should. There were even times where I was tempted with reciprocity, and I couldn't help but be reminded of a movie line spoken by Willem Dafoe, who is a great actor. I think his big coming up was his role in the movie Platoon, which is a very feel-good story. Anyway, he had a really good line much later in his movie career, Clear and Present Danger, where the White House was trying to basically use the CIA to avenge the killing of the president's friends by drug lords in Colombia. And so the White House official met Willem Dafoe. I can't remember what his name was in the movie. And Willem said, as he read the name of the operation, Reciprocity, he said, "Listen, I've been in this business for a long time, and I gotta tell you, revenge is a very dangerous motivation." Anyway, I didn't ever take any action based on that little wise tidbit, even though I was tempted to seek revenge on this person or persons. And I even perused what Seneca had said about anger. Now, he said anger had no worth whatsoever in humanity. It was the emotion that just drives animalistic mob behavior in humans and takes away our humanity. Whereas Aristotelians sided with Aristotle more to say that anger is an appropriate emotion if it's with respect to a just cause and released in a proper way. Seneca, who came obviously much later than Aristotle, said, no, anger has no value whatsoever. And in his book, he advised, more or less, don't take any action or decision when you're angry. And I've definitely adhered to that rule. But even Seneca even said, if you come back to that issue days later and you still feel that you were harmed and you still feel angry about it, then it might be an act of self-preservation that is behind you. In such a case, don't focus on the empty anger. Focus on what needs to be done to preserve yourself. Because self-preservation is warranted. So, and following that advice, the sad truth is I did pursue legal counsel for a bit, but even a couple years ago, it was way too late with respect to the statute of limitations for me to pursue a wrongful termination claim. And the attorneys said I waited too long to take action. So that just left me to fester with this anger over time. And based on the facts, as I reanalyzed them recently, I realize this person's long gone. They don't even think about me. It was nothing to them. They were just doing their job, and they are just going to continue to be a complete terrible person to other people. And they don't care, and they don't even remember. What they had once done. And now, for me to still be angry and to have not taken any action when I probably should have, was my own fault. And that is the big epiphany that I had. This is my fault now. I am misplacing my anger. To be mad at this person who's long since forgotten about me. And it's my fault I didn't pursue legal action when I had the opportunity. My anger then, frankly, should rest with myself for taking no action. So, with this epiphany in mind, I've truly got to find a way to forgive myself. And also to put myself in the position of me taking some sort of angry action. Such as leaking documents or something. I don't know, something stupid. It would be just that. It would be stupid and petty. And that was way below me then. And it's still way below me now. So, that's just not going to happen. Because it's not me. It's not how I roll. And I need to find a way to forgive myself to move forward. What's so strange is when I was in the Orlando jail, as I call it, which was essentially my jail. At one time, as an exercise in that program, they had us write a letter of forgiveness to ourselves. And I previously shared this letter in other podcasts, so I'm not going to get into that again today. For those of you new to the podcast, Orlando Jail is just what I call a time when I went to Orlando to enter an alcohol recovery program in an attempt to save my marriage, because my ex, not an ex at the time, obviously, my ex now, thought that I was drinking way too much. And so I went into their recovery program, just not for myself. I had no desire to quit drinking, frankly. I went in there just to try to save my marriage. And now we got a dog issue, so one moment. Alright, so moving on. Sorry about that dog issue right there at the end. My little guard dog and companion decided that some evil person dared to shut their car door outside, and he needed to go bark at them for that. So, that was unexpected. But yeah, he's my shadow. He pretty much goes everywhere I go. So every time I do a podcast, I can't ever do it without him being ever present in the background. So, anyway, God, I totally lost track of what I was saying. Yeah. So, Orlando Jail is just a code word I use for a recovery place I went to try to save my marriage. And it was so much like jail, frankly, that's what I started to call it. But interestingly, some of my best writing came out of there, including a letter to myself of self-forgiveness, which is why I alluded to it earlier and do now. I shared that letter. I'm still in possession of it for giggles. And I shared it in other podcasts. I really don't want to get into that letter again. But what's interesting is I think I need to do something similar to that again here, at least in my mind. Maybe not writing it. It might be good to write it. But at least think about it. To forgive myself for not taking action when I had the opportunity. And that is one of the few... there were several life lessons that actually came out of that program, that recovery program, that I was not intending in any way, sense, or shape to learn. And it didn't save my marriage. But I did come out of it with some interesting lessons about life. And it definitely impacted how I feel and think about things. So the idea of self-forgiveness is one of those things that definitely originated from that and is, I think, a very important skill to have in life. So in short, my anger, I think, is totally misplaced when I direct it towards this external individual whom I have no control over. But I should probably be forgiving myself. Because I'm actually angry at myself for taking no protective action when I had the chance. And that's just the cold reality of it. I did have that opportunity, and I didn't take it. So, that's something I'm going to have to think about and process and hope that that will help me climb out of this anger, because it's true. Anger is a terrible emotion. That's absolutely what's beating me down now. It is destructive. It is unfulfilling. It really is a terrible and dangerous and costly emotion. It just drains the life out of you. I do firmly believe that. And that's why I think I need to better place my anger. Because it's my own fault that I didn't take action. And then I need to forgive myself to hopefully finally move on and past this angst that's been tearing me down. And I got my companion, my little buddy here, you already heard, to help me out, to help me get through to that. So that's the other thing I'll add to it. Focus on the good things in life, not the bad. And my little companion, my little guard dog, my shadow, is definitely one of the most positive things I've ever experience in my entire life. So, with all that being said, I am gonna cut this week's podcast short and end it there, because it's gonna have to take some self-reflection and analysis to achieve any speakable level of self-forgiveness. It's not an overnight thing. And likely it's something I'm going to have to practice every single day in order to lose and manage that angst. At least manage. Golly, that would be nice. Be able to enjoy things in my life currently without something in the past clawing away and tearing me back down. So, thank you to all of you who have made it this far and passed the little dog emergency. And I really mean it. Thank you for listening to my voice, and if you want to support the podcast further, you could always go to its homepage on Spotify or Patreon /mydogwilleatmyface if you want to support it further. Hey, on the Patreon side, at least you get a picture of the dog you just heard going crazy. Anyway, you've already given me enough, though, so thank you all for at least hearing me out as I go through these internal and external struggles. In the final hours of my life, I do appreciate that sincerely. And I might have some intriguing, at least, news with the blood results come the next podcast. At least that's what I'm hoping for. So, I'll try to be in touch at least until that happens. But for now, auf Wiedersehen.